And at that point, I feel like I should jump in. Welcome to the September RAC meeting, everybody. Welcome back after what feels like an exceptionally long period of time, although maybe it's just that news is happening so fast these days that so many things feel like they've happened since we met in July. But happy hurricane season, I say with the most sarcasm I can possibly muster. Thank you to Harvey, Irma, Jose, and Katya for keeping us all very alert, especially Sawyer, I'm sure. We'll go ahead and get started with a conversation with the general manager, who is back talking to us again. I will open it up to him to tell us any wonderful, wise words of wisdom that he has to pass along, and then we'll have questions afterwards.
Well, thank you, and it's nice to be back. I'll be very brief and just obviously want to hear from you. But since we've last met, I think I was here in June, you know, we moved from Safe Track to the preventive maintenance and inspection program, and that's going well. We came out with a new schedule and our new fares and everything else that we had to go through at the end of June. We've continued to have focus on the rail car side of the house, particularly the 7,000s. As you know, we have 748 of those. We have 400 of them now on property, so we're already more than halfway there. And we've actually reduced the scheduled delivery by a year. It was rightfully at the end of 1919. We think we'll be out of that by early 19. So that's good news. And you're going to hear more about the bus from Jim. It's going to be a short, I guess. And then also we'll be coming out to the board next week with our bus fleet plan going into the future. So that's on the bus side. I've been spending most of my summer basically meeting with as many elected officials and policymakers and business leaders and community leaders, talking about some of the things that we put forward in late spring in terms of what we feel needs to be done on the operating side and the capital side to be sustainable into the future. I'm sure you've seen some of the stuff in the paper about that recently. And we're also now gearing up for our 19 budget, which will start in earnest in October, November, and December, with the planned approval by the board in March. So that gets, you know, that's where we get very focused very quickly on some of the challenges that we have to face to solve that. So that's sort of what I've been focused on, what we've been focusing on. But I'd be glad to take any questions or comments or observations that you have.
As chair, I'll ask the first one. You got two new board members. How is that changing the emphasis of the board?
Okay, we have two new federal, actually we're going to have even more than that, because Leif Dornshow has left as well, so we'll have a new member there. But we do have two new federal members. They come from a finance background, both of them, very sharp, very bright people. And so that seems, and I've only dealt with them briefly myself, that seems to be they're going to be their focus. But they bring a systematic approach to the way they think about that stuff, so that's, you know, that's good. I think we need to be challenged on that. We're not going to take our eyes off the ball on the safety, regardless of Bob Lovey still there from the federal side, who's a safety expert. So we're not going to change from that perspective. But we do miss the two that did leave. They were very good members as well.
I've been reading over the past few days some of the developments with regard to the conversations you've been having with elected leaders. And one of the concerning developments I heard was that, especially Maryland's leadership has been publicly reluctant publicly hesitant about the idea of providing WMATA with the $500 million in capital funding it will be to, you know, get back to business, essentially. Can you share with us kind of what your strategy is for trying to convince them, persuade them this is necessary? You know, if they don't provide the funding, what, I guess, alternatives do we have? What the service cuts are on the topic?
Sure. Yeah, what we're trying to convey is we are going to be focusing on the safety and reliability of the system, and we're not going to back away from that. So that means when we develop our capital budget, we're not going to push off things that need to be done, delay them, ignore them. I think that's part of how we got to where we got to. So from a safety perspective, we're definitely not going to do it. And the reliability side, it's a double-edged sword, because if we don't get the reliability up, we're going to lose revenue and lose ridership. but it's also reliability quickly blends into safety. Because if you just think of what we had to go through with SafeTrack, that didn't start off as a safety issue. That started off as a basic investment reliability issue that we weren't keeping up with, which then eventually led to safety issues. So the message that I've been given is you could do that, you know, when you're 10 and 20 years old, maybe a little bit when you're 30 years old, but now that you're 40 years old and looking into the future, you cannot do that. And literally things are, will not support that. They're aging out under us right now. So that's been my core message, is that we are going to show you what the needs are, and we're not going to, we are going to propose that we maintain that level of investment in safety and liability. So that then leads us to, all right, well, then what happens, right? You don't have enough dollars. So that either means either start to move with some of the things that either we propose or other people have proposed to deal with that issue, or we slip back to the traditional way of doing it, which is we go to local subsidies, look at service cuts, and look at fares. We will continue to maximize, you know, as much as we can, cost savings. But as I've said, you know, we laid off 700, you know, eliminated 700 positions last year. We can't do that. We saved $116 million last year. You just can't keep doing that year after year. The margins get slimmer and slimmer. And the only thing left really is on the service side. So that's the challenge in front of the region. And so what we just really do is try to articulate as best, you know, we can. That is what we're up against. And we think it's unwise to back away from a $40 billion investment that drives the economy and the environment and the mobility of this region is our position. So that you'll be hearing that repeated from us.
Thank you for coming, Mr. Wiedefeld. I have a quick question. At a meeting, a RAC meeting a few months ago, we had a union rep here, Mr. Garland, who said, who was concerned about the 7000 series being, I think his, I'm not an engineer, but I think he was just saying that it's heavier on the existing rail infrastructure than the previous Metro Rail Car series is. Is it, and of course, some anecdotal reporting on part of NPR about some homes in the Petworth area, I guess, being affected or and blaming that on the 7000 series. I would hate to go through all of SafeTrack and do it all that and then do it all over again, obviously, if the 7000 series has too much wear and tear on the track. I don't know if your team has had any chance to look at that or validate or invalidate their claims and somehow just address their concern.
Sure. No, they definitely are heavier. And I'll have to, someone have to fact check me. It's about 2,000 pounds per car, so it's not significant. I mean, it's heavier, but not significant, because if you have an 8-car 6,000 series with a lot of people in it, your weight's the same or more. So, so it's potentially part of the issue. I'm not worried so much about the wear and tear, but if that's maybe driving some of the issues that we've had in some of the communities. But we're literally doing those tests now. We've actually gone out and met with a number. We literally in people's houses, setting up instruments and things of that sort. And what we're looking at is we're running trains, and some of them are 7,000, some of those are 6,000, and we're seeing is there any difference from that or not. We'll have a better sense of that, what's driving that. I just don't want to leap into conclusions that it's that. But no, they are. We knew that going in. The technology and things have changed with the fleet, and so they are a little bit heavier, but we don't anticipate that being an issue. The larger issue for us is the power draw, to be frank. You know, as you run more and more 8,000 or 7,000 series or 8-car trains, the more power you need to draw. So that's that's a larger issue for us, because that, in effect, limits what we can do in terms of trying to get more capacity out there, you know, with, in fact, fewer sets of trains. So that's, we're also working that. No, they're very good. The numbers, numerically, they're performing much, much better. And we'll continue to work through some of the issues there, but it's the future.
How are you?
Good, sir.
And of course, I'm going to recognize Jim while you're here, because of the fact this actually going to probably roll to you, so you might want to have a response to it. Timing. It's all about timing. Well, it's not a bad, it's not horrible, but it should be addressed. This is regarding SafeTrack, actually. So I believe the majority of the members of the RAC ride the train more so than the bus, and I ride the bus more so than the train. So I've not heard this, of course, from the train, but on maybe two bus lines, and this is even as of last week, you know, you hear the announcements of updating whatever's going on that people should be aware of. Well, there's still a message saying, making announcements about SafeTrack on the bus.
That's not good.
So I think we might want to get that removed.
Thank you.
Thank
you.
Hi, it's always nice to see you, Mr. Wiedefeld. I know in mid-August, Metro and the Big Four wireless providers announced that riders will enjoy uninterrupted access to wireless, text, voice, all that, between Metro Center and Stadium Armor, I believe, on the orange, blue, and silver line. It's awesome because that's the route that I take. I was wondering, are there any other plans for these types of enhancements in the station and also within the car itself? I know it might be more cost-effective within the car because it's already harder to do, perhaps. But what are your thoughts on, I know in airports they have sponsorships from Samsung or other partners to have chargers. I know in discussions with various riders and station managers that riders are looking for a charger because their phones die, they're looking to call an Uber or call a loved one to connect them to the next phase of their journey. And are there any plans on putting those up, especially putting them on the edges of the station where, because overcrowding is an issue, so are there any plans to make, you know, the stations more modern, more accessible to all people, and potentially make their journey more seamless than people are looking around?
In terms of the service that we're providing, yes, we will have it in all tunnels, it's still several years away because it's literally to do it, you're shutting down track to do it. So we're progressing that. And as each leg comes on, we'll turn it on. That's what we have. In fact, I drove from Stadium Armor yesterday to Target West myself and used the whole way. So it does work very well. So we'll continue to do that. We haven't looked at the chargers. I've been thinking about that as well. Part of it is, you know, the nature of the business. Generally, people aren't going to be hanging around like an airport where you may be there for hours. So I'll look at it. Ideally, what we probably would want to look at is in the next purchase of vehicles is putting chargers in the vehicles, which is what you have, like a commuter rail line, like the MARS system has it. I think the RE has it. Not in all their fleet, but in some of their fleet. To me, that makes more sense because people are going to be on for 20 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever they might be on, versus platform, and I think it's less. It just makes. I don't think people would use as much. So I would look at it from that perspective.
And a quick follow-up.
Yeah.
I know the PPP committee is looking in this quarter to potentially go on ride-along so that we could directly engage with riders or host like rider forums in various stations so that we could, you know, think more collaboratively with riders, mm-hmm. kind of get their input on various things. Just to get a pulse on the riders themselves. Are there any topics or issues that you think are most, like, what would you like to see from this type of initiative? I know we have our own ideas, but just your thoughts.
I don't. Only because I don't want to bias it. I think you should really hear what people, what's on their minds and what, you know, what they're looking for. You know, we tend to get our own blinders just because we do this every day. So I think it's good to hear, you know, and maybe, you know, you'll come back and say, guess what? People want chargers and platforms. You know, you just heard my perspective, but maybe I'm totally wrong. So I think, you know, you should hear that. I think things you could talk about, not necessarily lead them, but you could talk about is, you know, what do they think about the painting of the stations, for instance. You know, is that a good idea, a bad idea? You know, you've seen Union Station, you've seen Capitol South, you know, There's a few stations where we have that. Is that something that, you know, they value or don't value? The advertising, do they feel that it's starting to get too far, not enough? Could they live with more electronic stuff? You know, those are the things we tend to get when we try to move on some of those things. We get a lot of pushback, and I'm not sure how broad that pushback is, but we get pushback.
Oh, yeah, New York is plastered everywhere. So
yeah, yeah, and I,
nothing
yeah,
compared
yeah,
to New York.
Yeah, okay. And so for me personally, I don't want to go that far,
okay, yeah.
But I think there's opportunities there. But I think, you know, we, you know, at the end of the day, that's probably as much of a customer, you know, thing as anything.
Pat?
Just want to put it on the record and also let the RAC know that the Accessibility Advisory Committee is very pleased with the announcement yesterday about the awarding of the contract for the Abilities Ride program. That's a program that is going to take place in Maryland, Prince George's County, Montgomery County. Same-day service for Metro Access customers. Two-thirds of the Metro Access customers come from Prince George's and Montgomery County. Same-day service, you're going to be using two cab companies, Silver Cab and Regency. The access that's being provided over the phone with apps similar to what we might see with Uber and Lyft is going to be very good. And the reaction from the committee was very, very positive. So we're looking forward to helping implement that, tracking the changes. I think that the point of having an alternative like this is to provide more immediate access to people with disabilities, and then also to see if we can cut down the cost of what a paratransit system is at $50 or about $55 a ride to something more manageable, and being able to invest that money back into the paratransit system. So I think we've created a win-win here. We will be pleased to be working with Office of ADAP to make sure that it's implemented right, get the feedback right, make whatever changes we want. But we made a lot of suggestions. The disability community made a lot of suggestions early in the spring. And I'm here to say that WMATA listened. I think we see it reflected in the RFP that went out and the contract, and that's very good. The other thing that you'll be hearing from the Accessibility Advisory Committee are the new Metro Access vehicles. We have some thoughts and some suggestions that we're going to be putting together, working with the people through Metro Access to coordinate our recommendations. And we'll probably be communicating those to you and the board, making sure that we give good recommendations so those vehicles can be improved. But the big thing that I just wanted to say was a job well done on the Abilities Ride contract. We're looking forward to it. It's going to be a big win, I think, for the disability community within Montgomery County and PG County.
Well, thank you.
Nicely done.
Thank you. And I want to thank, obviously, you and your committee, because you did help with that whole process. It took a little bit longer than I think, you know, all of us would like, but I think it was more important that we listened and we got that as close as we could. Because I just want to mention also that they also then have vehicles accessible vehicles is part of the contract, and also the training of the riders is also part of that. So that added some time, and that drove some of the decisions that we made. So thank you for your committee's work on that. And we'll obviously any comments you have on the new fleet will be helpful.
One quick question about that contract: how long is it? What's the duration of the Abilities Ride contract?
I paid attention last night. You want me to answer?
Go ahead. Go for it. I'll fact check you.
All right. Fact check with you, yes. You've got a base year for 1 year and four option years.
Thanks.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And the plan was because we wanted to assess it over the first year before we committed.
Right.
Going forward.
So. Yeah.
Bob?
Thank you. This weekend for 4 days, the Red Line on the western side of Montgomery County is mostly closed. They call it the Safe Track Light. I don't know if that's right or not. But how long are those kinds of closures planned in the foreseeable future?
Great question. What those types of projects are, they're not Safe Track related, they're not safety related, or we would do them immediately. Those are capital investment projects, basically. And we have a series of them in our capital program. So what we're trying to do is space those out when they make some sense in the time of year, for instance, obviously there's an urgent need we're going to get into doing it quicker. But we're trying to do that. So we have a series of them. I think we announced four of them in the next year that we're going to do it. And at certain times it may be. So we hit one that was about 3 weeks long, you know, earlier in the summer. So that is just going to be the normal course of business, similar to a highway that's got to deal with a bridge project, for instance. But we're going to project them out at the beginning of the year and say these are when they're coming, here's what they are. That's going to be the impact to try to avoid having come in, in a reactionary mode to deal with something. So that should be part of the normal capital programming process that we follow all the time going into the future versus what we had to do this year.
What was done?
That one, I think some of these were switches, some of the switch areas that we have to get in. They're just aging out, and they're very, when you get into them, they're very complex, and generally you have to shut down. You've got to do bus bridges around stations and things, or bus bridges in effect around the switches, which is taking you from a station to a station. So those are generally where they're going to be. But as we get into some of the further things, like, for instance, we know, and I know the Accessibility Committee knows this, we have platforms that are deteriorating. Some are sinking. Some literally are actually rising because of the way they were built, just the way they're built on the girder system. So when you do those, you've got to shut down, either one side or both sides to do that. But we know they're aging out. We know that they physically have to be done. So we're just going to plan that out and say, okay, on this date, this is when we're planning to do that. People notice and then try to time it as best where it has the least impact. But, again, that's a reflection of just the aging of the system.
And what's the status of the labor negotiations to the extent you can talk about that?
We're still in negotiations. We've gone back and forth a number of things. We'll see how it goes.
Is there some point at which one side and the other side can say compulsory arbitration?
Yes. Either side could declare, in fact, that they want to get arbitration. So either side can do that. Yeah, I mean, we try to do that as best we can. It's not like we're trying to hide anything with these things. The reality is, a lot of times we don't know things. Where we get one report, and if we go out with it, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes later, it's wrong, and we put out wrong information. So that's why, if anything, that's why we hold back. But we've had, unfortunately, we had some really terrible incidents with people, inflicting themselves. And literally, we don't know what's going on with some of those incidents. We've had some police incidents that literally were like the incident that you saw recently. That wasn't, that gentleman ran onto our property. We didn't know he was running towards our property, and we didn't even know that it had occurred for several days because there was, so things like that, for us to jump to whatever that was. We had a gentleman yesterday, unfortunately, that died in the station. We still don't know what is, you know, that's not an investigation. So we don't want to get out there too far. When we can, we will. The other thing is, just so you understand, sort of behind the curtain, when these things happen, I mean, it's like an all-hands-on-deck issue where everyone is working through what they're trying to do. And so it's pulling in bus, it's pulling in metro access, you know, it's pulling in elevator. It literally, every department is on a call as we're literally dealing real time with these things. So we try to come up with playbooks for these things, but even then, it's just, you know, you have to get it. And you're getting partial information, you know, people are reacting differently, all kinds of things are playing out. So, we can do better, but believe me, we're not hiding anything. It's just that we don't know it. And we will be as transparent as we possibly can. One thing I hopefully you're starting to see is, maybe you've heard it in some of our stations, the Penta system, which is the system, we're testing it, which is like if you go to Amtrak at Union Station, for instance, and you hear the announcements of the next trains, what that is a system where basically you type in messages, so that comes out constantly. Now, of course, it's a computer voice, but at least it's always constant. So we have started to do that in some cases. That will help us when we get into these events, because sometimes you have, you know, whoever that person is, they may have my voice, may have your voice, totally different, and they're excited and everything else. Whereas now we can all review the message beforehand electronically. It can be our computer and say, no, this is the message. It's all been corrected. Put that out. Because sometimes we send out wrong messages. So there's things like that. So you should start to see some of that more and more. And it's also tied to some of the... Oh, ask people if they like music or not. Yes, that's...
Okay, we've gone one round, and I know that all the guys have asked questions, not a single woman has. So just throwing that one out there for y'all to consider. Joseph, do you want to have the last question then?
The last question? Oh, wow. Okay. A lot of pressure there. As you know, facebook.com/WMATARAC, that's our Facebook page.
I'm sorry?
Facebook.com/WMATARAC, that's our Facebook page. And, you know, it's small but mighty, I guess. And we get a lot of interesting posts. A lot have been private messages, which is great because we don't want to air all of our dirty laundry. But we do get some visitor posts. And one is, I guess two, but the first one is, bus number 6564, no error, rider rude, pulled off before I could even see my 3-year-old and had groceries, not mention me being 8 months pregnant, and she wouldn't even pull over to the curb. She stopped in the middle of the street to let passengers off. Just a terrible screen. So what's the policy for waiting for, like, persons with disabilities or expecting mothers to be seated before the bus, like, moves on? But also on the flip side, a lot has been on the news, especially that one lady who allegedly urinated in a cup and then threw it at bus driver, and another one where just recently a man hit at a bus driver, and a lot of use and abuse of our bus drivers that we don't give enough credit to. What are ways of recognizing and, I guess, rewarding, or is there anything that's currently being done, or maybe you could maybe just elaborate on that, those instances, or not?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. We do have operating procedures that bus drivers are to follow. But again, it's you know, what was in front of the bus that drove that person to not pull over, I don't know. You know, but there's a lot of things that go into it. So but we have supervisors out there that basically are correcting them if they don't follow the policy, and we'll do that. And it's a fluid situation. A lot of times we're not there. The operators, the bus operators particularly, have the hardest job, I think, in the business, because they have to deal with, you know, obviously, riding, like dealing with the policies that we set forward, driving the bus safely, worrying about the 40 people behind them, and then they have to deal with everything else in society. And the challenge for a bus operator is everything from fare collection, you know, to whatever's coming through the door. And a bus operator, unlike a lot of our jobs, if there's an issue with a patron one day, that bus driver will be at that same place the next day at the exact same time. The patron knows it. They know it. And that person may be in a good mood that day, and they might be in a bad mood the next day, or vice versa. So it's just the nature of the job for them, unfortunately. So what we try to do is, A, to understand that, the pressure they're under for that, and try to reduce the pressure as much as we can, or where we can. On the, we ask them never to challenge people on the bus because it's not worth it. But there's a certain, you know, you do this every day and you do thousands upon thousands upon thousands of bus stops, and I'm sure it wears on you. You're only human. And that sometimes elevates things. They want respect, just like you all do. And if they're treated like, you know, like they're non-existent, and in some cases beyond, below that, which is what we just saw the last 2 days, you can understand their frustration and some of their attitude. Still, it's their job. And so that's where we have to, as managers, have to keep pumping them up. They have to understand that is their job. But it's a very, very tough job. In terms of things like that, you know, we have plainclothes police officers out there. We monitor weekly incidents that occur. We communicate with the police picking the district. We monitor social media, particularly the school now, just to monitor things that are going on that could play out on the buses to try to get ahead of it. But it is a very large system, and just physically to do that is very tough. What we're trying to do now is we're trying to get, we're being very strong, that the penalties should be stronger, particularly in the district, because if they're just a simple misdemeanor, it's some community service or something. And I think if you feel bonded or fluid with someone, I think it should be much worse, personally. And not only for that person, but for the people behind them, you know that they're taken care of. So it's a tough one. It's a tough job.
Second comment, which I'll end with that, is there's a bike project that supposedly is in East Falls Church neighborhood, and supposedly it's been dug up and chain fenced for nearly 18 months, and nothing has been happening in terms of trying to complete it. He was really angry, but then we said we'll talk about it, or at least try to raise it in this meeting, or just like projects that are overrun in general, and he said thank you, or whatever. But do you know if there... like, what happens with projects that are overrun? Like, are a lot of projects overrun? Not too many. I'm sure it's in a report somewhere. But in particular with this, I'm not sure if you know specifically on this one project. There are probably dozens and dozens of projects that you're strategically focusing more on. But yeah, I think he just pointed out this East Falls Church bike locker project that's been going on.
I don't know that one. I can find out, though. We'll follow up and find out what's going on.
Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah, that's more appropriate than the CEO, sorry.
Yeah, but I mean, general.
Like going to the top.
Yeah, no, but general projects, you know, they're you run into all types of issues, whether it's community issues, whether it's environmental permitting, you know, all kinds of things can slow things down, or the budget, or poor management, you know, can all play into it. So each one is unique. You can't just point to one thing. And so we, you know, obviously we're pushing from a management side, but I think, I'm sure you read the Potomac Yards issue, you know, that may be pushed back further. It's a very complicated project. You know, so you start looking at the cost of that, and you start to think, well, wait a minute, maybe we ought to rethink this again. So that can occur. With the 7,000s, it was just tsunami. You know, that's what slowed that project down by almost 2 years, as they had to regroup. So all kinds of things occur, for sure. When we get into the Union Station, I'm sure we'll run into all kinds of issues and start, you know, getting into, you know, the things that they're going to do there.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your time. And thanks for all you do. I know it takes a lot of time and effort, so I do appreciate it. And when you get out in the stations, I find it a blast to go out there and talk to people personally. And I think it's neat. I mean, you know, sometimes you're always not always nice, but at least you hear, you know, you get the pulse very quickly. So thank you.
Thank you, mm-hmm. Thank you very much. For round two of WMATA staff now.
Projector, okay. I just want to introduce Al Himes. He's the manager of service planning. So all of these concepts are his if you like them, and they're mine if you don't. As we do every year about this time, we have begun the process of what we call the State of Good Operations, or we call it SOGO for short, because everything at Metro needs an acronym. And the purpose of this is to, outside the context of the budget, when everybody's trying to make ends meet, we're talking about what we do with the resources we have, how do we best use them to solve the problems that have been brought to our attention, to do the new services that the jurisdictions have indicated they want us to do, or make adjustments to respond to opportunities that have come along. But ultimately, it has to be fully funded. It's not really, we do use this process to direct new investments, but primarily it's about using what we've got and doing the things that need to be done to keep us in a state of good operations. We do have some proposed eliminations, because to balance the budget, you've got to give up something in order to be able to move it to other locations. As a sort of a house cleaning activity, we have to make permanent the implementation of the Addison Road Capitol Heights transfer. That was something that was brought up by a member of the public about 2 years ago at a public hearing, and we went ahead and implemented it last year, and so we've done the Title VI analysis and identified that there's no disbenefit or disparate impact, and we're recommending we keep it. So, but we are recommending that we do away with the one that we did between Silver Spring and Wheaton. Very few people have utilized it. It just has not been very effective accomplishing what it was intended to. So that's sort of the summary. Go on to the next slide. So as we were talking about, this is where the proposals come from everywhere, come from you, from public complaints, from formal study processes, from jurisdictional requests. We're really thrilled that one of the proposals is something that we did a study 5 years ago. The citizens have been advocating for it ever since, and they finally got funding from DC Council, and we're going to implement it in December on 14th Street. So sometimes you just have to last a long time to make something happen, but eventually we do get around to that. Moving on, just wanted to make a point that we do ongoing evaluations. I look at ridership reports every month. We look at on-time and crowding reports every week. We are constantly, through our study processes, trying to engage the public. We do an annual work plan to fund the, you know, to generate the budget requests. We are continually engaged in refreshing and trying to stay current. And I can describe all seven different programs we have to do that, but the point is we're trying to keep our system fresh and engaged and appropriate for the meeting the needs of the region, which do change. Go ahead. And so this is the summary of all of the routes that are listed in here. And do we have the table a little bit later on now? This is the only table. So if you want to know the details of it in the brochures that I've handed out, there's a narrative description. If you want to go onto the Metro website, you can get a hold of the docket, which is the formal document. What did you end up with, 65 pages, give or take? Yeah, where there's a couple of pages with a colored map and a description in actual English of what the proposals are for every one of the items. Some of the highlights in the district is the restructuring of the 14th Street service. They have a 52 route and 54 route, and then take the 53 and add some additional resources and make a Metro Extra service, a limited stop that'll run from Farragut all the way up to Tacoma, and hopefully be able to speed up some of the travel. Every bus is full, and every stop takes a long time. So this is something we've been working on for quite a while. As part of that, on the downtown end, the 52 route goes all the way to Lafont Plaza. There's a brand new development opening up over along the waterfront, about 2.5 million square feet of development with no new transportation services. So one of the proposals that's in here is to extend the 52 down 12th Street, along Main Avenue, and up to Lafont Plaza as a way to be able to tie the new waterfront development into the mall and downtown and access to 14th Street. So we're looking for folks to give us input on that. Coming from the other side, our Route 74, which comes down 7th Street across the mall, past the waterfront, over toward the baseball stadium, one of the options is to route it around a different block so that it can catch the eastern portion of the wharf development. We're looking for people to give us an input on that, because it means being on 7th Street instead of 6th Street, so anybody who was on 6th Street would have to walk an extra block. If you're going to the theater down there, you may have to get on and walk across Main Avenue rather than being dropped off at the door. So we're looking for folks to give us input on that. In Maryland, always enjoying a good contest, I decided to raise the issue of the B-30 again. Yeah, that's the one that goes from Greenbelt to BWI. And so as part of the budget cuts from last spring, D30 was reduced to being weekday only, once an hour. Well, that's actually worked out pretty good because our ridership's been fairly stable compared to what it was before on weekdays. So that says something about the market. Something we didn't get to talk about during the spring hearings, which is one of the reasons we like to do these fall ones, is that Prince George's County and the Regional Transit Authority up in that's running services into Laurel have been talking about changing some routes up there. And if we change the B-30 to run up US 1 instead of the Baltimore-Washington Parkway, we could not only get increase the number of people that could access that route, but we could make a connection to Laurel. And then one thing we've been talking about is connecting to Arundel Mills and the retail employment area that represents on our way into the airport. So rather than it being an exclusive service for the airport, we're actually now linking this employment retail center. And yeah, there's a casino there with Laurel. And we could potentially increase by like factor 14 the number of people that would have access to the service. So instead of having a route that carries 300 people, we might have a route that carries 500 or 600. Well, that's 100% increase if we could get up to 600. And as we go into the next budget, if you're not carrying some people on that route, you're not going to survive the next round of budget cuts. So this is an attempt to find what that market is and to really respond to some of the innovation that the county has been looking at and make some connections in a growing area that really has very little service. And then in Virginia, the really big driver is Arlington County and their proposals for improving service on Columbia Pike. Now, I live there. It's pretty good already, but they have a vision of a transformative experience. And as they move to investing in creating new transit stations along the corridor, really improving the built environment, the communications, and trying to establish a real example of like Metrolink, what you can really do to create a great transit experience. They're talking about rerouting some of the services, improving services, extending more of the service to Skyline area, making that an all-day two-way service, a number of things. And so you'll actually see four different scenarios to look at the different ways you can put things together, some of which cost Arlington money, some of which cost Fairfax and Arlington, some of which only cost Fairfax, and some of which don't cost anybody. So, you know, this is, and the reason we're bringing it forward at this time is that to make the kind of investments that they want to do, it's going to take us months to get ready, to align the staff and the managers and the buses and the bus stops and all the customer information and the marketing. And that's not something you do with 30 days notice. You've got to really plan ahead. And so we're having this conversation, which is really about a fiscal 19 project during this year, so that we've got enough time to be able to talk about it. If you go back one more, let's see, for those of you that hang out with Mr. Orleans up in Greenbelt, we are talking about the G12 and G14. Right now they have a timed transfer, but in order to make that happen at the Roosevelt Center, they only leave Greenbelt Station about 8 minutes apart, which means then there's 50 minutes until the next bus comes around sometimes. So one of our planners came up with the idea, well, if I give up that time transfer, I can then separate the buses leaving Greenbelt. So if you're going to Greenbelt Road, you could take either one, and that way you could catch one at the top of the hour, and then at 15, and then at 30, and 45, and you get more choice rather than having the convenience. And so there's a trade, the balance there. And so we're looking to the public to give us some feedback on that. We have some proposals on the J-12 and K-12 down in Forestville. If we're on this side of the block, we can offer easy transfer. On that side of the block, we have more traffic congestion. There's some trade-offs to go there. The good folks at Leisure World have asked us to reduce the number of buses driving through their front courtyard, and so we're trying to do that, and hopefully the other side of the road at Leisure World won't disagree with the side that's been talking to us, and so we're looking forward to that. And let's see, the J Line, which is the east-west highway service across Montgomery, we're looking at getting rid of one of the route designations, the J3, J1. In the district, one of the things we proposed is eliminating the V5, which is a service that runs from Hillcrest down to LaFont Plaza. It's a very nice ride, but it's not very highly used. And so in order to free up some resources to be able to do some other work on the U5, 6, 7, that would be one of the trade-offs. As I mentioned, the district provided $2 million a year worth of additional funding. And so in addition to 14th Street, we're also going to be doing an improvement on Alabama Avenue. And by doing that, we're proposing to extend the U8 up Benning Road all the way to Congress Heights. And that would provide a new way to be able to connect from Upper Ward 8 to Lower Ward 7. And complement what the W4 does, connecting Upper Ward 8 to Upper Ward 7, and This is a proposal that had come up through a study process we did several years ago, so we're real excited about that. And then lastly, the district has suggested reducing some of the X2 trips during the day and adding X9. X9 is our Metro Extra service that goes from Fort Lincoln and all the way into the Lafayette Square. So it's basically replicating. It's limited stop. It would provide a quicker way to get through the corridor. And with the continuing growth of ridership on the streetcar, there's less need for 8-minute frequency X2 service, so we want to bump that up to 10-minute frequency X2 service and then have extra X9 buses. So that's one of the proposals. In Virginia, the 4A, 4B, there's a discussion as to whether we need to run the 4A all day or trade off and let the 4B be the service along the Arlington Boulevard corridor. The 7A and F is a proposal to reroute it to serve Pentagon City on its way into Pentagon. The 11Y, after the safe track, especially safe track 9, where we lasted for, I think it was 45 days down in Alexandria, 11Y ridership was up 40%, even after the rail got back to normal. So the city asked us to put some additional trips in, and so we're trying to accommodate that. And we talked about Columbia Pike and the 22 line. Those are also trying to route through Pentagon City. The 20K and N is, you're going to have to remind me out. Oh, right. King Street Station is going to start reconstruction. And so we're looking for places to store buses. So the idea was we take this is the Duke Street service, take that and run it through King Street rather than laying over there and go down to Eisenhower Avenue as the place to then turn the buses around to head back to Fairfax City. And then Metroway, one of the things we realized too late to enact in June was that with the wider headway on the Blue Line, the Metroway schedule was originally created to align with the Blue Line, so you'd have easy transfers. Well, since we were running basically a 6-minute frequency out of Crystal City Station on the Metroway, and then the train went to 8 minutes. So this is adjusting that headway to match up. And the side benefit is previously we had short trips that would run from Crystal City down to a little past Glebe Road and back again. Now we can eliminate the short trips, and so you go Braddock Road to Pentagon City completely. And there's just one travel pattern, and it runs all day, every day, and has a very convenient frequency. So that's the other type of adjustment. So that's a quick summary of all the things that are in there. This is all about trying to address the needs of balanced capacity. We don't have a lot of duplicative service, but and I will wrap it up with just moving on to the next slide. And so, you know, this is about making the service better and move on. Go ahead and click to the last. So the important thing is the public process began yesterday. You'll see us out at number of Metro Rail stations and events. The public hearing will be next door on September 26th, that's Tuesday. There will be an open house here, and then people will be able to testify in the next room. Public comment period is open through October 2nd, so we encourage you to go online, come to the events, come to the public hearing, encourage people to participate. We really do take the comments into account when we make our final decisions. That's why you'll see a number of options listed out, and I don't guarantee that things won't change as we implement them. So what's proposed is a proposal. It may very well be different to reflect the wisdom of our riders and input that comes along. So that's sort of the broad brush stroke, and I encourage you to read the docket and all the material, and happy to answer questions.
One overarching question that I have, question or impression, I'm not sure which. I don't know that I speak for every member of the public, but I am speaking for myself here. This feels like a very elaborate game of whack-a-mole, and I'm curious what the long-term strategic plan is for improving bus service, such that I'm sure that next year there will be another series of bus routes where you are making little adjustments here and there. Is there a plan, granted with all the budget unknowns, that may be difficult to do any kind of long-term planning? But is there any consideration of doing a more holistic look at all of the bus routes as opposed to looking at them one by one and making slight schedule adjustments here and changing the route ever so slightly there?
Well, first off, let me emphasize how important doing those small things are. That you add up a lot of small things and you look back and you've added $30 million worth of service and you're serving 25,000 people a day. And It makes a really big difference, so I just want to put that as a foundation. Larger scope of bus services in the region. We did do a really comprehensive study 17 years ago and created, not just for Metrobus, but for all buses, a roadmap into the future. In 2008, we concluded a refresher of that called the bus network evaluation, making sure we're still online. We're a decade from that, and there's a real need for not so much reinventing the system, but at least explaining it to the people who didn't participate 10 years ago or 20 years ago or live it every day like Al and I do. So, yes, we're actually working through the management right now, a proposal to take to Mr. Wiedefeld to try and host a regional bus conference sometime in the coming year. In 2006, we hosted one, and we were able to get all of, it was over 250 people came to the conference. We were able to get all the bus providers, all of the politicians that are supporting them, the department heads together, and to come up with some strategic policy and program that set the tone and the agenda for the next decade. That worked really well because we were able to generate Metro Matters resources. We were able to create the priority corridor network. We were able to create the bus stop guidelines, public information program, the illuminator systems. There were a lot of things that came from that. It's taken a while to work them, but now we're getting to the point where, yeah, we need to take a look and see, particularly in the context of Keep Metro Safe, Reliable, and Affordable, how do we avoid having to go through what we did last spring every year in order to fit within that 3%? If we can set a strategic approach, because the actions we take next year are going to dramatically affect what we're going to have to do in 2023. And so we really need to be making smart moves and deciding, are we going to have a 1,583 bus system or are we going to shrink it? Are we going to continue our role as the regional provider or are we going to defer a lot to the locals and let them take it over? And so these are some of the longer term discussions we're going to have.
Tsitsa, who has been winning the Get His Name Tag Vertical game so far today.
Well, thank you for explaining all of this to us. I have a question, just looking at the routes that are up for elimination. For example, the B5 or the 94. What are the alternatives, you say, for example, for the B5 eliminate and response to ridership and service alternatives? Granted, there are obviously a limited number of riders, but what alternatives?
Well, for that one particularly, they've got the 32, the 34, the 36, the 39, the 92. There's a lot of service in that area of the community that they could choose. And instead of being able to ride to the left and down, they'd have to go to the right and around. Or just go back to Naylor Road and catch the train.
Me? Okay, I didn't know you said my name. Thank you for... Okay. All right, thanks for coming, Jim. I have a couple... I have a quick question. On the 7, that's my route, by the way. so I'm just going to ask you about, in my own personal self-interest here, I'm looking at the language on page 6 of the pamphlet, and I see that it says new timetables will reflect an increase in the time between buses. Is that an increase in the headways, or is that the trip will take 5 more minutes longer because we're hitting Pentagon City?
It's actually an increase in the time between buses, the frequency.
So it is a headway change. I'll talk to people in my neighborhood, obviously, about that. Just obviously, I mean, you guys look at the statistics. I don't. Obviously on a rolling. You look at the statistics on a monthly basis and whatnot. Just keep. I would like you to keep in mind, though, that the 7 is one of those routes. If you're at Pentagon at 9:30, 10 o'clock at night, if people are waiting at a platform for a bus, it's mm-hmm. 7. It's like one of those, what do you call it, the secondary rush hour, I think, kind of routes. And that might be, like I said, you look at the statistics on a monthly basis, I don't, but it's very well used. It's standing room only on Saturdays. It's something that a lot of people, it's nowhere near the usage of 16, obviously, but it is a very well used route Arlington, Alexandria.
Yeah, it's an important line, and that's why we're looking for people's input.
Okay.
Is there a value to being able to go to Pentagon City? And if you're waiting between buses, you can go into the Starbucks or run into the mall or use that as a destination without having to ride the train back from Pentagon or walk or transfer to a different bus. Because right now, you come down the express lanes, you're at the Pentagon parking lot, you don't even stop until you get to the transit center. Uh-huh. So this is a trade-off of, and it doesn't necessarily have to be all day, but once you start doing different patterns, it gets more confusing. But that's the sort of thing we're looking for folks.
Would it hit Pentagon City during rush hour? Obviously, you're not really thinking about shopping when you're not talking about hitting Macy's.
No, but that's a lifestyle route that people are using it for all sorts of purposes. In the 16 line, for example, we get 3,500 riders a day out of Pentagon City. So, is Burlington South similar interest in use? So those are the kind of inputs. And you can talk to Al for more details because he occasionally rides that route as well.
So it's like not just, it might just be like a daytime, like a weekday change versus like a weekend change, or is it like it would be that way all the time? And that doesn't go for just a 7, but it goes for everything here.
Yeah,
all the route changes here would be permanent.
It could be either or, and
it'd
all of the above.
Okay.
That's...
Right. Okay.
So there's more details in the docket page as well.
Okay, thank you.
But those
are
exactly the types of feedback we're looking for to see if it's a great idea or one whose time has not yet come.
I'll talk to my people. Thank you very much.
Lorraine. Hi, Mr. Hamley. I'm also a user of the 16, so as you know. So my question is, because I'm looking here at the docket, and it just says restructure, extend to Crystal City, restructure focus service on Columbia Pike. That's all it says.
Well, that's
now,
just
the
announcement.
Now, if I go over here in the brochure, it says something about limited stops, making some limited stops. My question is, are they all going to become limited stops? Because we have all this listing of all the routes. Because there are some buses that, should be stopping at every...
Well, what you have there is the announcement, not the docket. The docket has a lot of detail about each of those. But, one of the alternatives is that all of the buses coming from Fairfax would be limited stop. And since Arlington's building their transit stations, They're going to have 21, I think, along Columbia Pike. Those would be the only places that they'd stop. Well, that means, let's see, the one at Oak, Quincy, Thomas, those would be the type of stops that wouldn't get served, but all of the ones like out at Greenbrier, at Dinwiddie, at 4 Mile, at George Mason, those would be the places where the buses would stop. Well, even the locals, one of the proposals would have basically, you know, all of the services only stop at those stations as a way to speed it up. And that's why we're looking for public input on exactly how it should work. What's the balance? Years ago, we had tried reducing the number of stops on the 16Y, and the folks up at Oakland and Monroe insisted that they needed a stop in there somewhere between Glebe and George Mason. And so we found a balance and were able to do that. So this is sort of similar to that discussion.
Just as I was going to follow up with the 16, is this working?
Yes.
So on the 16, the Columbia Pike corridor, I did read the docket and I looked at all the different scenarios. And I wanted to just, in a nutshell, it looks like it's saying that, you know, we're going to do limited stops, we're going to do, and here are the places we will be stopping. So by deduction, that means that the other places they won't be stopping. So, you know, this sounds sarcastic, and I don't mean it sounds sarcastic, but it is true there's increased demand in the corridor. Tons of new housing, people moving there for the metro accessibility. Seems a little oxymoronish that you're going to cut back on stops due to increased demand. It's kind of like, you know, Columbia Pike, kind of like the yellow, you know, it's another train line. Now, in my mind, it's almost like saying we've got more people on the yellow line, so we're not going to stop at Crystal City. We're not going to stop at Pentagon. We're not going to start at Archives anymore. So I'm just wondering, the increased demand and the chance for increased revenue because of all the people moving in the neighborhood, why are you going to cut out service?
Well, it's not so much cut out, but the philosophy that is being proposed for consideration is the stops aren't all that far apart. So in many instances, you don't need to stop at Highland when you're going to stop at Walter Reed, which is a softball throw away. So if you can reduce the number of stops, you can reduce the travel time, which makes the service more attractive to folks who've moved in there. And so you balance the time it takes to access the service versus the time it takes to ride the service. And we've been, you know, when we restructured in 2003, we eliminated, I think it was 8 stops out of there. And I get complaints from some of those riders still.
It's true, a few of them are close, but most of them are not. And what it does is that, again, it starts making Metro something for people who are in very good shape, not just somebody who's slightly disabled. Those extra steps when it's 20 degrees outside or snow, it's 80 degrees, humid. But the other thing is if, like, for instance, as you get closer to the Pentagon or Pentagon City and the lines are merging, you've got Walter Reed and then Barton and then Courthouse. If you get rid of, and
Scott,
all of those are lines.
But those aren't the ones that would be eliminated.
But what I'm saying is even back at Monroe, there are lines of people waiting to get on at those stops. If you discontinue one of those stops, the line at the next stop will be even longer.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just not sure how that works.
On September the 21st, Arlington's holding a meeting at Arlington Mill. So please come so that you can tell the county representatives, you know, your view on that. Because that's, you know, the... It's a collaboration. It's our buses, but it's their county, so we work together. 21st, I believe it starts at 6 p.m.
Yeah.
but it like it's doing now, only it would be able to take you all the way to Skyline. And I think some of the trade-off is that the folks from Fairfax coming into Arlington want to go to some of the stops you were talking about. So, you know, does that make sense from an interconnected perspective?
I will put the room on alert that I intend to end the discussion at 8.
Sorry.
Valerie.
Yes. Yes. Well, let me encourage you to make that representation to marketing, because one of the things that got cut was the promotions budget. And so although there's lots of great ideas, there's very little capacity to implement them. As we go toward putting together the fiscal 19 budget, if being able to do that is important, then the board needs to hear that is a priority. Thank you. And yeah, we've been working on the 60s for about 2.5 years incrementally, and I think you're going to like what the plan is. All day connections to downtown and good service up in Petworth. So.
Yvette?
Hi there. Yeah, we enforce meetings around here, but which line? Yeah, the R4 has been challenged. Okay. Well, the way to get the gateway is send it to me. I'll give it to Al. He'll get Ginger to get in contact with you, and we'd be happy to come out to a neighborhood meeting or to host something and to engage in a dialogue. It's been, I don't know, probably 8 years since we studied the Hyattsville services, so it's about time to go back. Unfortunately, you live in the state of Maryland, and I haven't been real generous, so there's a little bit of what I can do with existing resources, but we'll do what we can. and this is right. And this,
thank you.
Sue? That's the same route. You know, it's not bad. Yeah. Oh, it's a terrific way to ride. Yeah. I've ridden it a few times myself going up to meetings in Hillcrest. And man, you're there before you even started reading your book. I mean,
yeah. Rebecca?
Yeah, unfortunately I do, but very quickly, the line had a lot more riders, and then commuter rail started running on the weekends, and they're offering midday services, so it's actually easier and comparable price to leave Union Station to get to BWI than it is to ride the Green Line up to Greenbelt and then take the bus, and so the competition got a lot better. And so we saw a continuous decline in ridership over the last 3 years. Got to the point, and then this last year, the budget challenge was significant enough that when Maryland looked at the services they felt they had to protect and those that they felt that they could reduce or do away with, the B30 is one of the more expensive per customer ride services that we operate, and so they looked at a way to be able to maintain connections to BWI because they want to support that, but to reduce the overall cost so that they didn't have to cut service in Hyattsville or more dramatically in South Prince George's and other places. So it's a matter of the lesser of two evils. Yeah, well, part of the reliability issue is that Baltimore-Washington Parkway is so inconsistent. All it takes is one accident and you're shut down for hours, and then you have to detour, and the detours are to go up to Route 1 or to Route 95. And this past week, for example, there's been a detour pretty much every day. So it occurred to me, well, if we're going on detour, why don't we just make that for permanent and see if we can't pick up some additional riders? So, yeah, it would add some additional stops. It would increase the travel time of, right now it's about what, 35 minutes, 40 minutes from Greenbelt to the airport, and it would make that something like 50 or 55 minutes. It's a trade, but it's a whole lot cheaper than a taxi or an Uber, and if we can get some additional riders, it might, you know, preserve the service.
All right, our last two will be Joseph and Bob, taking into account that we have 5 minutes left, so leave time for Bob.
Wait, really? I have a data question. Just a really quick. Okay, so I was wondering how many people currently work on these, like, strategizing the bus route elimination? Is it just you, you and him? You guys have a team, but, like, how many people work on it? And also, are there any plans to expand, like, all the documents that you guys have on the data and the schedules and all of that, It seems like enough information, I think, but is it all the information that we could possibly get so that we could, you know, crowdsource or, like, do data science on it from, you know, from the general public? Because I feel like many brains are much better than some brains.
Al has a staff of five.
Okay.
The service planners who work on this, each of them have a geographic area that they focus on as a specialist. So it's a really limited staff when you consider that we carry, you know, 500,000 people a day. There's five, so that's one for every 100,000 riders. We have gigabytes of data if one really wanted to do a deep dive. In fact, last April, we hosted a hacker conference here where the folks that really, as a hobby, like diving into stuff and seeing what they can discover. We made our data available, and they dove in, and they came back with several observations that we've been following up on. And one of the things is a new program called Metro Hero that allows us to analyze the space between buses, the gap.
Yeah.
And so we're actually using that now to manage the services.
I was there, the developer.
Oh, okay.
Day-to-day or whatever. But are there plans to have that just perennial, like just all the time, like just have the data on the website where people can access so that they could do their own things? Because you could just upload the data.
I don't mind uploading a set of data so that people can analyze it, but there's enough work every day that it's not really relevant to put up every day's worth of information. But if someone makes a proposal that I can't refuse, then
It just seems like there's a potential. We'll never really know, but like it seems like people would take advantage, possibly. Like, worth looking into. Okay.
Yep, we're happy to sponsor you.
Capping us off.
There we go. Let me speak quickly. Back to the B30, but also your comment about the waterfront, the lack of all the development of the waterfront, the lack of service. Have you ever explored, I think you probably have, really laying some of this cost off on the employers and people like that who directly benefit
That's what we rely on the jurisdictions to do.
I'm sorry?
That's what we rely on the jurisdictions to do. So in that case, that would be something for the District of Columbia in approving that development for them to have made arrangements. Our relationship is with the district, and so then they can choose to fund our services or in any way that they choose.
Has that happened? Is the district offering to the employers in waterfront?
Well, one of the recent things they did was mandated employers' support programs, travel support programs for, I think it's every employer with more than 25 employees. And so, they're providing the travel benefits. So that's a significant benefit to riders.
Well, I'm talking about, for instance, the state of Maryland, they go out to the car rental places, all those hotels, and BWI, they benefit because their employee gets, some of their employees get transportation.
Well, Maryland's unique among the members in how they fund. They have like 24 different sources into the Transportation Trust Fund that they then use to pay Metro expenses. And so I'm sure somewhere in there there's pieces of that.
Well, I would just urge you to consider that. My other question is, we'll always hear comments like the one that Joseph made about pregnant woman with a 3-year-old child on a rainy day where the bus went by her. I think a lot of that can never be fixed totally, but some of that could probably be corrected by retraining the frontline managers at Metro Bus. Have you been doing any retraining of the frontline managers?
Yeah, actually, we're committed to a cycle where all bus operators, and we have 2,600 bus operators, receive a refresher training at least once every 3 years. Management, similarly, is going through a refresher program every year to stay on top of it. But let me just put it in context. We have about 280 complaints a month of failed service to stop. We carry 11 million people a month. So the instances of that happening are very rare. And oftentimes it's contextual, where the person was standing, whether they were seen, whether the driver was focused on avoiding something. It's certainly not something operators go out and intend to do. Oh, I think I'll just pass up riders. They may be doing following an instruction because there's a bus right behind them. I don't know the specifics of that case. I'm just putting it in context that it does happen. We're dealing with human beings. Mistakes are made, but by and large, they're very rare.
Well, all I do is encourage you. I'm not talking about, much talking about the operators, but the frontline managers in the system, because they're the ones who, if you depend on holding the operators, the train operators, all those people accountable for providing good customer service.
Absolutely.
And they need to be, and they, you know, I don't care how many complaints you get or how few you've got documented. You know, if I complained every time I had a happy experience with a Metro employee, you know, every time they blurred, you know, a train, couldn't understand them and something's happening, I'd be complaining. I spent the rest of my life complaining. You know, and I think other people would too. So I think it's, huh? What? You would have more time than I do.
It's a struggle.
You couldn't do it all day long. But I think, you know, I guess my point is I think it's really important to continue. I think that
it is. But let me just point out that one of the trade-offs to support all of those weekend rail shuttles that you're talking about takes management to run those things. 25% of our service managers were involved in last weekend shuttles. That's folks who aren't on the street being able to follow up with the individual operators. So, you know, staffing is a challenge, staffing and resources to be able to sustain that kind of effort. We're going to be back on the Red Line this coming weekend, taking a weekend off, and then we're coming back again on the 23rd. And it's a continuous process that is the new normal, but we're not really staffed up to that yet. But I will certainly pass on your observation, because it is critical to what gets observed and monitored gets done. And so that's certainly a mantra that our service management does believe in.
Thank you very much for spending
Thank
such
you
a good
for your
chunk
comments.
Of your evening with us.
I look forward to seeing you on the 26th and at some of our events.
Thank you. I'm now going to open it up to public comment if any members of the public would like to speak. I know we've got such a crowd back there, but come on up.
My name is Kenneth Mitchell. I attended these more than I can remember. But in terms of, I was thinking, I know people talk about comments and, you know, getting customer service and everything. Like, I noticed a few, I think it was last summer or the summer before that, when they had a hot car incident in terms of the air conditioning not working in cars. A lot of people went on Twitter, and they didn't put the train number instead of the hot car. I wonder if, like, I noticed Twitter seems to be more responsive to people's complaints. I wonder whether there could be, like, some sort of regular or type of format where, like, if you have an issue on a bus, bus number is generally printed in the front, say the bus number, the route. That way it's not just like, oh, this bus missed me. Well, it's around this time. Well, I'm assuming they know who the driver is riding, you know, based on scheduling, I'm assuming. So it'd be more of a pinpointed complaint. And then also, I know in New York, for example, you go to New York a lot of times when they have construction, it's almost like they'll publicize, here's the work we're doing, before and after pictures, and it gives people more of a sense on, like, you know, things are actually improving. I notice, you know, there's a lot of advertisements now on the 7000 series in terms of Select Pass. You know, hopefully that gets out to a wider audience. I think, you know, Metro would be better. I know they have the ad campaign and everything, but it'd be nice if maybe they show some before and after pictures of improvements. And even going back to the whole, you know, bus number or train number, you know, maybe even, you know, pictures of, you know, if someone took a picture of this particular station and, like, the trash is overflowing, or all these lights are out, or this gate is broken, or what have you, you know, Metro could use the public as their eyes and ears to know, like, instead of sending someone out to check every single station, you'd be like, all right, these are places that get constant complaints, and this is legitimate because there's a picture attached to this. Like, so that's my comment. Thanks.
Come to the PPP meeting. We want you there. You have great ideas. At 6 o'clock. Thank you.
Catherine, while Jim is standing here, I was going to say something. I mean, this is in relation to what Ken was talking about. When there's an incident on the bus, you don't have the ability to report the bus incident for the bus that you're on because the number's not inside of the vehicle. It's always on outside. Is it? It's on the back. I have to look. I don't think I've seen it on all the buses. Okay. All right. Well, I'll leave it a look.
Bit of housekeeping, approving the minutes. If you can remember all the way back to July, our last meeting, we held one, and there are minutes from it. Does anybody see anything in the minutes that needs to change or be updated?
All right.
We have a motion and a second.
I think. Didn't we vote on, like, the changes to the bylaws, like, which ones we'll be considering for this month? Or I'm not sure if that's in here. Or did we? Okay. Okay. Is it? I thought we voted last time.
I believe that was in June.
In June. Okay, gotcha.
Yes.
Okay. Just making sure. Double check.
Okay, and it feels like a lot has happened since then, so it's hard to keep track. All right. All in favor of approving the minutes as written? Any opposition? Any abstentions? Three abstentions. Four. Okay. Thank you for helping me count. Counting to four can be hard sometimes. All right. As far as the chair's report, given that there was no board meeting last month either, it's been in WMATA terms, it's been quiet, except that it really hasn't. But I don't have a whole lot to report. My major thing that I do want to remind everybody is that we do have transit passes available for WMATA RAC members, because we certainly don't want the cost of attending these meetings. That would be way too ironic if it were too expensive to take WMATA to come to talk about WMATA to WMATA. So there's up to $25 a month, that you can have for, you'll get your own specific WMATA Smart Trip card that you can use for all of your RAC travel. One slight addition to that program, if anybody is interested in getting themselves one of those cards, just go see Joy. There's a form you fill out. It's fairly straightforward, and then you can use that for all of your RAC travel. The catch is that you are to use it for RAC travel. So there is also a form that goes with it for... We have a handy-dandy little form that just says where you were traveling. If you regularly are traveling from wherever home or work is to this meeting, then that is absolutely fine. You can just continually enter that on your travel log. If there are other RAC events that are going on, if, for example, you're going out to the safety drills or any other public meetings or anything of the sort, if you plan to come for the September 26th bus open house, that sort of thing, you are more than welcome to use WMATA RAC travel money for that. Put it on your travel log. So Joy, when she is providing you with the information about getting the card, she'll also give you the information about filling out that travel log because, of course, there's always paperwork attached to everything. So, you may or may not have noticed, I'm sure you were very excited, those of you did notice, that on the series of attachments that were on the email that Joy sent, one of them was our bylaws sent back to us. With a couple of changes from I don't actually know who they were from. From the WMATA board. Secretary and the General Counsel. Okay. Made a couple of mostly minor comments. They did not make too many minor comments, but they made a couple of comments, a couple of changes to our edited version of the bylaws that were interesting. I think the one that at least caught my attention the most was that they changed the opening phrase, or the opening bit about the mission of the RAC, and I would remind you that if you forgot what RAC stands for, it is the Writers Advisory Council. They changed the phrasing such that they took out the word advise in the intro, which seemed a little odd, and they put it, they rephrased it as provide input to. It's kind of a subtle difference. It's also slightly mysterious in my point, in my opinion, given that we are the advisory council to no longer be a given a mission to advise. I mean, we're not the writers' input provision council. That just seems a little more awkward. the RPC, it doesn't flow off the tongue very well. There was one other change that they made that was of note, where we had put, where the bylaw, we didn't change this. This had already existed in the bylaws. The phrase was that we would, among other things, gather internal WMATA information as necessary. They changed that so that it said gather relevant non-confidential WMATA information. And I have no doubt whatsoever that was a general counsel move. So those were the primary changes that I saw in it. Did any of those of you who avidly read this, did anybody notice anything else that I overlooked in the changes that WMATA made to us?
Make a request. Could you guys speak into the microphones when you're speaking? Because that's okay. When I have this in, if you're not using a microphone, I might as well have an earplug. So thank you. I'm sorry. I couldn't hear anything you said, Lorraine.
My comment was that I would like them to provide a specific definition to the terms confidential and non-confidential. Because we don't know what they, since they are the ones that did this, I want some specifics of what they mean, what they consider confidential, and what they consider non-confidential.
So we can ask, we can send a question back to the General Counsel and the WMATA Board Secretary about, I would ask about those two particular points, why we lost the word advise, and what confidential means. I mean, there's no classified information to my knowledge here at WMATA, so I'm not sure what it is that needs to stay entirely confidential. Certainly salaries and personnel information we're not going to be asking for, and they shouldn't give it to us, but we'll see. Sitsa?
I guess, firstly, just to comment on that, I don't know if we're sort of allowed to not push back, but sort of politely, I guess politely push back against what? politely provide input into their defense. Especially given that we are the advisory council, but that we're supposed to be providing them with input and with advice based on not just information that sort of out there in the public, but on special information that we're asking staff about. So I just have a question for you. I don't know if that's an opportunity. And then my other point was, I couldn't tell if there was a slight change in regards to the staff designation. I think there was. It's that instead of the board secretary designating who our sort of staff liaison would be, there would be the assistant general manager for customer service. So they get to the power call. Is that correct? In any event, you can't lose joy. That's sort of the most important thing at the end of the day. So I just wanted to ask about that and make sure that even if that change were to go through, we'd still be able to, have the boys as our go-to champion.
Okay. Deborah?
I agree with you that sometimes the word can make a difference, and then how far do we want to look at that? But one thing I just wanted to comment on join the RAC, I have been under the impression that it was a council set up by the people, for the people, that the writers had wanted to set it up. And in fact, that's not true. The board initiated and set up the RAC. And if you look at the original documentation that the board set up, the board wanted a council to advise them on ridership issues and everything, because there just wasn't enough of them. They needed more people that were out there, get people from Virginia, Maryland, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm not sure if this was an edit by one person, i.e. a secretary or a group of people, but it seems to me that they don't understand the original intent of the board creating the RAC. And I do think that if we don't catch a few things here and there, it'll just kind of, when I first joined, I think the previous executive staff didn't look at RAC as much as I think we gained a lot of inroads with Mr. Whitfield and his staff, and I think they've been much more receptive to RAC. So I would like to continue that, and I think that might be a step back.
Okay. Rebecca?
Can you hear me? Okay.
Yeah.
I'm just confused about the term non-confidential, and I think it's similar to what Deborah was indicating, but I know at a couple of meetings here, we've talked about some of the subcommittees that have been trying to get policies from WMATA, and I mean, it really prohibits us from doing the mission that we are charged with doing. And I almost asked a question, but I decided to hold back and keep it for us. But my understanding is that if we want to get a hold of policies, the only real way to do it is the public access to records. They have their own sunshine law, like it's like FOIA but different, and it's the park. And I don't understand why the RAC would be forced to go through park. And I guess we should perhaps use this as an opportunity to voice a concern that if we're really going to be able to do what we're charged, provide input or advise, then we should know what the policies are. We don't have to make them open. We can keep them confidential. But we can be charged with maintaining policies in their confidential manner in the scope of doing our task, and then, you know, distribute information to the public on behalf of the ridership. And I feel like this is the perfect time for us to voice that. And if you would like me, I can draft something and send it to you. I mean,
sure.
I'm very, very interested in the PARP or getting documents outside of that. And I know that there's like some random policy document that they have that's like from 2003 that talks about what a bus driver is supposed to do on getting a person secure into the bus and why they're not supposed to leave and how long they're supposed to do. That's in a policy, but who knows if it's the current one, because I had to like pull teeth to get it from the WMATA office. So anyway, that's my comment, and I'll stop talking.
I would be happy to take any language you feel like sending me on that one. Colin.
Yeah, I would, so I echo everything Rebecca said, and I would even go further to say that there are a few WMATA policies that I can think of that ought to be confidential, period. It's a public agency, it's a transit agency, it's not a defense agency. So, aside from things that deal specifically with, security and infrastructure, provide information to criminals. There shouldn't be a policy on WMATA's books that is not accessible to the general public, and certainly not to the RAC. So, I agree that this language is troubling in and of itself, because it sort of suggests a further restriction on access to information for us beyond trouble that we already have in terms of getting very basic information from WMATA. Luckily we have Joy, and she's dedicated to tracking down information, but it shouldn't be nearly as hard for her to get that information as it is. So, I raise that as a general issue, and also say that I would like to push back on that, but it's certainly on the advisory stage. The other piece that seems raised about staffing,
Joseph?
Yeah, I guess one last edit. I think they made or someone else made, I don't recognize the name, but it's instead of encourage transparent decision-making, which I think hits at the crux of what we're talking about, it's promote transparent decision-making. A lot of, you know, just nuance on wordsmithing. And I think the non-confidential part is more of the battle that we might be looking at. I don't know. The advise and provide input. I'm sure, like, reasonable minds could disagree on, you know, the nuance of that and how much it matters. And I think, if anything, if we didn't make that edit, then I think they should have a little bit of depth and, like, just let us keep it because we didn't open up that Pandora's box. For our edits that they have any, you know, questions on or comments on, I think it's fair game for them to just, like, ask us why we're making changes to documents. But if we didn't make the change, like, I'm wondering why they're taking, you know, this advantage of this opportunity to make the change. And I'm also curious if they're okay with all the changes that we made. Like, if they didn't provide any comments, then it seems like they're good with it, right? It seems. Yeah. And then, of course, my committee name is whatever. Well, we already talked about that. But just the same. Paul?
I get the relevant non-confidential, that particular issue. I hate to say it, but I feel like I don't want to throw out the lawyer card, but lawyers throw that out all the time. I'm not going to lose sleep over it. If they give us something that's stamped confidential, well, I guess we could pretty much say that is confidential, or we would probably ask whoever beforehand. I think this came up with the safety. The customer service visit, are we allowed to disseminate this information? They said probably not. So I think it's more or less something that's not worth worrying too much about. The advisory thing, though, is something that's more interesting to me because provide input sounds like we're just, I hate to say it, kind of wasting our time. That's very nice. You could put your comments in the little box on the way out, and you have a very good day. No, I don't think that's what our organization was meant to do. At least that's not what I thought it was when I signed up for it. And I could say that probably for everyone else in here, too, right? All right.
Well, as long as we're going to be, all our actions are going to be reviewed by an internal department, customer relations department, as opposed to the board, we're going to continue to have problems. And these kinds of edits, to me, institutionalize that not so subtle change in how we operate. Created by the board, answerable to the board, all of us are appointed by the board. Congress being responsible for some agency, although I guess the second question is how do we approach responding to these comments? Do we write, you know, do we send a letter saying, well, please, hope that we'll think about it again, or do we say, you know, these are really wrong, or do we say, we go to the board of directors. I mean, we go to the board. Skip commenting to the general counsel and secretary of the board, Bobby Lynn as well. I'm sure she was involved in this as well. Just go, you know, send a letter to the all the members of the board and say, you know, we have proposed these changes for you to consider. You haven't had an opportunity to consider. We got feedback from the staff. Here are our comments. Yeah, I mean, I'm going from I'm concerned that this thing gets dragged out.
My sense of this is that everything would probably best be able to be a face-to-face conversation.
Whatever.
Maybe we can send a note saying, you know, we're interested in discussing some of your suggestions, which, you know, we're outside of the scope of our proposed edits.
And I'm sure you thought through these edits carefully, but maybe they did, and maybe it was just like, okay, this sounds better, and they don't care so much about, like, what these words, I don't know. I don't know what they're thinking, so it's good to just suggest, hey, these are our initial thoughts, like, we're open to your, you know, feedback on our feedback of your feedback.
Yeah, just a quick note about this. dawned on me when I was writing up this EPA security memo. I included one section just on rider feedback, which to me is right. We are, this is what we've been told, this is what we've observed. But I actually reserved a lot of space in that memo to talk about how we're actually in a very unique space where we're connecting dots, meaning we hear from staff when board members are here hearing the same thing we're hearing from staff. We have board members that are here talking while not in the presence of other board members. We have the GM here when neither staff nor other board members. So you can kind of get my point, right? So to me, the advising piece is really crucial because we're more than just providing input. We're actually connecting the dots and really kind of apprising. We've heard this multiple times. And if we're hearing it from all these directions, the advice piece is you all need to come together and talk about this and plan for it and operationalize it. So for me, I would push back on this.
Okay. All of that feedback taken into consideration. We'll see if we can have a chat with, I guess, board secretaries and perhaps general counsel about any of these changes. The intention as of now is that if the RAC concurs on these changes, which it sounds like we don't entirely, then it will go before these bylaws, these edited bylaws, will go before the board at their late September meeting so that the board can approve them and we will be done with changing the bylaws. I'm not sure what the timeline will be if we make these suggested changes. I don't know how much that will slow things down. It could be that we would get pushed back until October. If we can have a brief conversation and they're amenable, then hopefully we can stick with the late September date, but who knows? Valerie.
I think that it is important to understand our roles. I think we've been talking about that. And Joy, you're welcome to stand up and disagree, but I believe our role is to communicate with the board. We can choose to accept input from more modest staff, but this is a document that is between the board and us and our members. And so I do not think it appropriate, after suitable discussions, the WMATA staff should not be stopping us from submitting this to the board. That's my point, is that muddies, again, that gets back to what Bob was talking about, muddying up the responsibilities and reporting. We report to the board. We don't report to the staff. We welcome staff input, but we will use that in our context with our discussions to the board. So I understand what you're saying. I think we should follow through on all those things. But I also think that at a certain point we can say thank you very much for your input.
Yes, you provided us with input. To wait for, well, see if we can talk to the board. Whoever it was that made the changes, sorry, not the board, the board's secretary, whoever it was that made the changes in this particular document, it would be great if at least I and perhaps a couple of others, maybe. Teleconference would be fine.
Some of them might be.
Yeah, that would be fine. I'm happy to talk to whoever it is that made these changes and politely push back. All right, with that, it is 8:32 and a half. So I, unless there are objections, I am going to call this meeting to an end. At our next meeting, I believe we will have Lynn Bowersox joining us. So I'll start thinking of any questions or feedback or input that you would like to provide.
Input.
Or advice. I mean, go all out. Provide advice.
Non-confidential, exactly. I concur. Let's go. I know a lot of people, including Marlene, is affected by this. Even though I still love every time I go by there, when I see the lawn chairs on the bus stops, because I was not able to see anything of the